Welcome to the very first Access All Areas with Dermot and
Felicity.
Together we're going to bring you all news for disabled people across Ireland and the UK. Felicity, what sort of news would you be bringing for us?
Well, I will be bringing perspectives from a queer disabled person's perspective, but also I think from a wide variety of potential political views, in that I'm very heavily involved in disability activism, feminism and other areas. But when I'm not doing this, I'm also running a non-profit called Chronically Fabulous, which is based in Northern Ireland, and I'm a full-time PhD student, which is a job in and of itself. I focus on disability history there, and when I do get time off, which is very, very rarely, I like to do arts and crafts and all sorts of things geeky. So, you know, I will probably be bringing disability representation in the media, especially in all things that I love, such as Star Trek. What about yourself, Dermot?
Well, a lot of my disabled activism is revolved around politics. So I'm involved with local politics and trying to bring disabled view. But I'm also trying to ethically bring a disabled view to wider prospect across the whole of the North through Stormont. So that's a lot of where my priority is based at the moment. But outside of that, what I'm constantly trying to do is to improve the access to services, buildings, and all sorts of products across the country. Because as many people might forget, disabled pound is equal to 19.5% of the population. So it's incredibly bad business if you don't want disabled business. So let's open up the business, let's open up the country, and let's start spending the purple pound.
See, that's a very good point, because a lot of businesses don't actually have accessible toilets. And this is the thing, a lot of people, they see a disabled toilet, they assume that that is an accessible toilet. And what they don't realise is sometimes the nearest actually accessible toilet for many disabled people is up to 3 miles away from their house. There's people who've had to have surgery to be able to go to the bathrooms because the bathrooms aren't close to them. It's definitely an issue that I see in a lot of university settings. And I think it's hopefully going to improve following a recent government discussion about accessible toilets. And I know this is something that both you and I have campaigned on. What work have you been doing recently with this, Dermot?
Well, I've been working quite closely by an incredible woman here called Christine McClemmon, who I'm sure you're probably familiar with. Now, she has been speaking to the finance department at Stormont, who has been told that they're going to look into get changing places part of the regulations for new builds here. Now, this has only just come on to England in recent weeks, where if there's any new builds going to be built, like shopping centres, cinemas and stuff like that there, that it has to be changed in places. And that currently is in place in Scotland as well. Now, the only place it doesn't have it is here, and I believe Wales. You would know better than me when it comes to Wales.
So Wales definitely has issues on this. There was a news report earlier this year about a student who wasn't able to use the bathroom at school and therefore wasn't able to actually attend school and access their education. It is something that is being looked at. I think the main issue that I personally have is, while putting it into new builds is good, it doesn't actually resolve the fact that there aren't currently those accessible toilets in many places. New builds don't happen all that often. So for example, with the university, there's been discussions about gender neutral toilets in all new builds, and potentially this could extend to more accessible toilets. But the actual new builds are very few and far between in practice. I would like to see, I think, this being turned into actually transforming some of the toilets that are currently already there. And raising awareness of this. I mean, toilets are something that we could talk about for ages. You and Skye have a really good Red Cord campaign, because many of our listeners are probably aware of the Red Cord that they see in the toilet. Usually it's all tangled up and out of reach. I have made the mistake of trying to untangle it and accidentally setting it off, which was highly embarrassing. But notably, it took a very long time for security to come down to the bathroom to actually see what had happened. Which shows a flaw within the system. But Ewan's Guide do these little cards that you can stick onto the cords, and they're free, So anyone can order them, and I personally carry some of them around in my handbag, along with some of Dermot's My Way Access stickers that he has for vehicles that choose to block my access on footpaths, which is also an issue that you're very passionate about as well.
Well, I've, as you're very well familiar with Felicity over the years, and the same as any wheelchair user or any disabled people, you know, it's difficult enough at the best of time to get about in our towns to deal with various issues with cobbles and broken curbs and stuff like that. But that is also a lot is compounded by the fact that there's not enough parking spaces, so that means then the drivers then decide to park in footpaths, and that would normally block a wheelchair user, block even parents and prams and all types of restrictions. And in many cases, I've had to go onto the busy road to try and navigate around it. And as I don't need to tell you, it's a very scary obstacle because the lorries and cars come flying at you. And I just don't know how to stop more accidents.
Yeah, and it's an issue that I've been seeing an awful lot more with social distancing, interestingly. So I'm currently shielding, and the only time I leave is to go to the hospital, where the other day I had the delightful experience of not being able to get parked in a blue badge space. There were people parked without blue badge permits, and I do understand that sometimes people forget them and still need to park. But in this case, there was enough missing blue badge permits that you could be forgiven for thinking that just maybe that person may not need to be parked there. I was unable to get parked, so I had to basically block the middle of the car park temporarily to put my rollator out of the car so that I could then park, because if I park in a normal bay, there's no space to take it out. So I did this, which led to a lot of tutting and some very nasty words from other people in the car park. And it's really depressing to think that verbal abuse, not that verbal abuse is acceptable at any point, but the anger and upset that they felt wasn't at non-disabled people parking in blue badges spots, but at the actual disabled person who couldn't get parked. But when it comes to going out onto the road because of obstacles on the footpaths, with social distancing, there are businesses who, because they're social distancing, have been expanding out onto the footpaths. And there is a pub near me, which I pass on my route to the hospital, which has put a sofa out onto the footpath, blocking the footpath for anyone who may have a mobility aid or need to get past. And so there are people having to go out onto the road to get past. The footpath is public property. And unfortunately, this is the sort of thing in that people don't think because it's not impacting them directly. So you'll see it with bikes and with scooters and other things just left as obstacles on the path. It's not even just an issue for people, say, with mobility issues. A person who is visually impaired may not see that. It's a tripping hazard as well. It doesn't just affect disabled people, but it also affects non-disabled people. And I think we just need to have a bit more thought and kindness in the world when it comes to this.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've noticed that trend myself. Not in person, because I've been shielding, but I see a lot of disabled people have been sharing photographs and videos where they have been absolutely blocked because, as you say, there's tables and sofas laid out in the footpath and they can't get past. Now, as I do a bit of work for the local council, for Mana and Oma, I'm the vice chairperson of their disability advisory group, and that was a point that I had raised at the meeting last week. Now, to date, as far as I'm aware, nobody has abused that system within the district council. But what they're doing here now is they're going to be offering licenses, because to date here, you're not allowed to do that unless you apply for a license for street furniture. Because it was stopped before because there was some sort of legal issue with shops. But now, because of social distancing, it looks like it's going to go ahead and you can apply for it. So it means then, like say, cafes and pubs, they can put tables out in the footpath and rely on the extra space for that. Now, I said from my member of the council that, you know, the disabled people within this forum need to be consulted about every license that goes out. We need to give approval now, because we can give our ask, because we know exactly the obstacles of not only that often actually sit on the board, they're going to see, but we know what disabled people are going to see as well. And again, because we have had lots and lots of email coming to me about a lot of different issues. So again, this is one thing that's going to pop up. We're going to see a lot more of it now over the next 6 months or 12 months of just being already not being able to get about the high streets. It's going to be a lot worse if these sofas and tables and cafes and all is going to be blocking our access even more. From chatting to you online for many, many years, we share one big passion together that has absolutely nothing to do with disability. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Could it be sci-fi and possibly Doctor Who?
It contains a bit of them. It contains dressing up,
Cosplay?
cosplay, that's it.
My cosplays. Oh, I have been so excited about cosplay. I'm currently sewing stuff at the minute, and I recently got a load of material and patterns, which are driving me slowly up the walls because I'm not very good with, lots and lots of information. I'm a very visual person. But yes, cosplay. I have no idea what my next cosplay is going to be. It's probably going to be Star Trek related, but I do know that your cosplays are absolutely amazing, and you've inspired me because I know that next time I go to a convention, I'm probably going to do up my wheelchair as some sort of extension of the costume. I did for my Poison Ivy, in that I put ivy and stuff around the wheels and sort of made it like an extension. But I mean, I'm going to turn it into like a proper throne. And I think I'm going to have my partner push me in my throne, like the regal person that I am.
Well, I pity that poor person. Well, no, I agree, because over the years, I'm like, I one of my good mates, Will Conway, who the man that actually got me into cosplay, because we've quite stepped into that world. It's like, cosplay, oh, come on. No, I'm not getting well with that. But he said, oh, we'll just go for the crack one day. And I just got sucked into it. I just can't get enough of it. But we decided, let's just lean into it. Some people I've met from other disabled cosplayers, and they try and shy away from the disability. That's grand, but I thought, if I'm going to do it, I am just going to lean into it. So we'll build all sorts of crazy and imaginative things around my wheelchair. Like this one time I went out Doc Brown from Back to the Future, only this time Marty McFly wasn't driving the DeLorean, I was. So Doc Brown was running about Belfast in a DeLorean, and I've been as a Ghostbuster as well, and I've been as who else have I been as?
You went as Thanos.
Thanos, yes. But in that case, with my cousin Paddy, who built me the Iron Throne, or it's that at that stage it was the cardboard cutout throne, I believe it's called. But I think my favourite had to be Tyrion Lannister. I just absolutely love that.
Yeah, you really leaned into that one. Like, you had your hair done and everything for that. That was a full-on cosplay. It wasn't a wig or anything. It was properly dyed hair.
Oh, I suffered badly for that. And my hair just went crazy. The beard would just itch all the time. I was finding food in the beard that I had the week before. It just wasn't good, but when you have a passion for something, you go for it.
Well, my Poison Ivy outfit I hand sewed together, and I think cosplay is a really fun area. But like when I went to a Star Trek convention, it's one of the things in that as a disabled cosplayer, I have come across people who have been quite rude about it. And I don't know if you've had this experience, but I had someone who was all like, "Oh, I was ruining the aesthetic because I was in a wheelchair."
Oh, well, I think in my case, because I threw myself into it, people went with it. If I had shying away from the fact that I'm a wheelchair user and pretending that I was non-disabled, I would have been, people would have been like, you're just ruining things. Because I've had that been told to me in my civilian life, where I'm not dressed up, that I'm just making people feel awkward and I'm just go home. Because people are out for a good night and I'm ruining it. But that's because I just threw myself at it. And great thing was I was accepted for it. And, without sounding like an egotistical fool, I've been told now that when people go to Comic-Con, one of the things they're going to be looking for is what's Dermot coming out this year.
See that, going back to what you said there, and that like you're ruining it for other people. Like, I don't think they would say that to a non-disabled person, though. that's the thing that I personally, because I remember when that person said something, I was quite upset because I had been up very early that morning because I went as an Orion slave girl, but I went as an Orion slave girl who was in Starfleet. So I was painted green and I had gotten to a lot of effort to get painted green. My partner had helped me reach areas that I couldn't paint myself and I was all very pleased about it. And little things like that can ruin, I think, the fun of cosplay, because yeah. I wasn't shying away from the fact that I had a wheelchair, but these people made it into an issue with the cosplay. And it's just, cosplay's for fun, it's for everyone. And I think sometimes we have cosplay snobs.
Well, that's just, that's unfortunately the case, as I would call them, elitists. You know, unless your costume isn't TV or film perfect, then you don't belong to the, what I would call the inner circle.
Yeah, because like not everybody has the money to buy perfectly authentic replicas or even have the equipment to make it. Some of us do the best that we can with what we've got. And my Poison Ivy was clearly Poison Ivy, but it wasn't a screen or television specific version. It took elements from different things. You could tell that it was Poison Ivy, but you know, it had its own kind of spin on it, which I think was a lot more fun, because Poison yeah. Ivy obviously has more than one outfit. She doesn't just wear the same clothes day in, day out. That wouldn't be hygienic.
That's what I love about, to me, that's my favorite part of cosplay, my favorite part of Comic-Con. And don't get me wrong, when you see the perfect TV film ready cosplay, they are fantastic to look at. But personally, I love it when people put their own spin on things.
So like, I love seeing cosplays. I don't know what it is. I've noticed this a lot, that there are certain shows, specifically anime shows, because I show my age when I talk about particular animes that I have watched, because there's newer animes that I don't know, and I see them at conventions and I feel very out of my depth because I don't recognize them. But some of the detail in them is absolutely amazing. And also they're wearing quite sometimes very heavy wigs all day, and you know, heavy, and wigs are itchy and they're warm, and convention centers are usually boiling. And I think was it one thing just to sort of end on is was it this past week locally within Northern Ireland, we lost a huge disability advocate with Chris Ledger passing. And I think it would be remiss if we didn't mention them and just the amazing work that they have done for University of Atypical. And I know that personally, and myself, but also you, that we would wish their family and all their friends the best, and may they rest in power.
Definitely. I didn't know Chris quite as well as you did, but we did have several conversations over the years, and I found always to be a very powerful voice within the disabled community here. And not only that, she's very empathetic and very good listening ear if you had any issues, and she's always there if you needed help and support with the campaign. And even when you didn't, she's always there to help you anyway.
Legacy has obviously been secured within Northern Ireland and within the arts more generally. And one of the campaigns that they were heavily involved with before they passed was the We Shall Not Be Removed. It's a hashtag on Twitter and elsewhere. And I think it would be really great if people would go and support the University of Atypical, which I know is very close to her heart, but also look at that hashtag and support other disabled artists. And I just think that would be a touching tribute to an amazing life and an amazing legacy and a life gone too soon.
So thank you, Chris. Your work will continue to live on and you will have a lasting impact on many disabled people within the arts and beyond. So I just want to say thank you, everybody, for joining in our first podcast. We're not too sure when the second one drops, but once the second one drops, we'll be on a more regular schedule by then. So for myself, thank you for listening.
And from me, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time.